You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Then we are running hot, straight, and through from the Green Jobs, Good Jobs Conference here at the Marriott Woodman Park in Washington, D.C. I'm Bob. Welcome aboard. There are literally thousands of committed environmentalists and labor activists here in conjunction looking for a way forward, a future, a viable, sustainable, renewable future for this nation and this planet. It's been very exciting today. A lot of workshops going on, as well as some very interesting plenary sessions and speakers. Not too terribly far in the recent past, Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius addressed the crowd here. Starting here in a very short period of time, the general reception will be taking place, and that should be quite the social event of the overall gathering. I am told that event will feature some remarks by none other than one of the godfathers of the very idea of liberal talk, namely one Jim Hightower. Now, I'm not promising anything, but the communications director for the Blue Green Alliance is a wonderful young lady by the name of Kelly Klinghammer. I have aggravated the very life out of Kelly for about 3 days now. But you know what? So far, she hasn't told me to go up a rope, so I'm going to count myself among the fortunate. As it stands, I went to her and I very politely asked her, listen, could you do me a favor? You think you could get me Jim Hightower in here when he's done doing his shtick, get him to come around? And she said, hey, can't hurt to ask. So one of the great voices in liberal broadcasting may be with us presently, and I'm hoping that that is indeed the case. That would be a couple of hours down the road. We still, you know, you would not. We're getting really good at this, Nick Regalado and me. Nick Regalado at the keyboard for your blogging pleasure. Say hi, Nick.
Hello.
No, that's where you say hi, Nick, back.
Oh, hi, Nick.
There you go. Yeah, you got, you know, the young ones. You got to work with them a little bit. We've got to set the scene for you a little bit. This is a lobby area outside the ballroom where the reception and the plenary sessions have taken place. And what we have before us is a great conglomeration of folks, a lot of people coming and going. Here at our table, we're set up here with the magic mixer, official horn gig rig broadcast remote operation. We've got some Coal River Wind T-shirts out. We've got some Coal River Wind buttons available for those who would like to take them. And just letting people know what's going on in Southern West Virginia, what we're trying to do to, because you know what, when you get right down to it, if we're going to green this nation, if we're going to green this economy, it has to begin in the heart of Appalachia and in the heart of coal country. Because until coal country is green, until mountain removal is ended, we really can't,
we can't say that we're greening the economy. We just can't. So this has been a very profound opportunity to get that message out. We'll be talking to some folks involved in the fight here presently. Nick is very busily taking information and handing out some T-shirts and the like. This is just magnificent. I think this is. Well, I'm looking forward to talking to a lot of people coming in and out of the event this evening, and I think it should be quite enjoyable. We also have some tech work yet to do. And you know what? We've gotten rather good at this, I'm afraid, this business of doing broadcast and tech at the same. You know, it's one thing to be a tech guy. It's another thing to be a behind the mic, behind the in front of the camera guy. To do them both at the same time. John Fox has taught me so well. A few years ago, I would have absolutely blanched at the idea of trying to do these two things at one time. Now, John Fox, John just says it's another day at the office, and that's what it is, and we get it going. So let me just check a couple of settings here and see if we've got phones coming in. A fella can dream. Okay, that looks good so far. And what do we have here? Okay. Hold on. Oh, I have dial tone. Hey, John Fox, you listening? You want to try to sneak in a test call? If you do, we're using 304-574-7814. 304-574-7814 is the number that we're using to take calls. If this all works and we get folks behind the microphone, well, heaven only knows what might happen after that. So that's what's going on at about 16 minutes past 6 o'clock here in the Eastern time zone. As far as we're not going to go into the news of the day just yet. There's entirely too much happening here. Let's see, what can we do here? I'm waiting to see some communication come back at me. Okay, John's ringing in a sec. Okay. All right, just stand by. Bear with us. Wow. Can you imagine? It's got to be mentioned. We are here through the kind offices of the Sierra Club as well as Coal River Mountain Watch. And this couldn't have happened without either one of them. Of course, the network, The Horn, is of course, sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch and CRMW.net, coalriverwind.org, and also brought along by the kind contributions of the listening audience who understand the viability of liberal radio. John Fox, is that you? John Fox, do I? Oh, darn it. Okay. Well, there we go again. Okay, so we're probably going to have that problem some more tonight. That's all right. Hold on. Just one second here. Okay, I have... John Fox, are you there?
I see an established, Bob.
All right. I've got your audio.
I don't hear an echo.
Okay.
But I don't hear you. I don't hear you. Check your mix minus, please.
That's what I'm going to do right now. My mix minus should be in pretty good shape, John. Let's see. Okay, John, any difference?
I heard a poppy, funky...
Okay, we get nothing going on there.
Cable.
Well, we're getting closer. For some reason or another,
Hello? No echo, Bob.
Okay, well, No, actually, I'm sitting here. This really is amazing. You know, we're teching with thousands upon thousands of miles away. I'm sitting here sending information to John to let him try to diagnose the problem. Here for a second, please. That is what's going in. Okay, so this cable right here. See, make sure it's going into the hole that's blue.
Blue?
All right, John, is anything happening for you yet?
So I heard that other pop, Bob.
Oh, rats. Okay. Yeah, John, I've changed some cabling here.
Still don't hear anything coming from you, whatever you're doing.
Okay, well, apparently we haven't quite sorted this out yet, but we will eventually in time. It's just kind of tough to do it on the fly. And, just to give you an idea of what it was like around here this afternoon, we got here in plenty of time to get stuff set up. However, we then had to wait for some infrastructure stuff, otherwise known as tables, to get brought along so we could set up the rig. But at any rate, we'll be talking to a lot of the folks, several folks who are involved with this whole process here presently. And in the absence of telephones, let me suggest email. Let me suggest also the headonradionetwork.com chat room. Both are free and easy. To email me, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, or to chat in the chat room, of course, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. BobKincaid@gmail.com headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, and we can certainly carry on the conversation that way. We will eventually sort this thing out. We're just not quite there yet. But that will happen. That will happen eventually. Let me take a minute and just see what's going on here. So we will we'll get our first conversation going here momentarily. Ah, yeah, okay, we could do that. all this at one time. Well, let's see. Okay. Well, before folks start showing up to join the conversation, there's certainly no harm in having a quick look at what in the world is going on in the world. That's what we do anyway. I gotta admit, I really miss the telephones. Because this isn't nearly as much fun just, you know, babbling away my own little lonesome self. Yo, Nick.
Yes. Are we on?
You're about to be. My co-host for this trip, as well as partner in broadcast desperation, Nick Ragalotto, who's live blogging as we speak at headonradionetwork.com.
I am there.
While I've been babbling away, Nick, you've been working with the crowd. Who all are you talking to?
Oh, Bob, I've been talking to so many people that have that are here at the conference. People who are involved with, you know, all things green on all fronts and all levels, all angles. People doing things like trying to get people, ex-prisoners, into green jobs and creating green jobs and funding green projects. There's a lot of green going around here, man.
Yeah, it's a pretty green place. I haven't seen, you know, that's true. I haven't seen any fiends of coal hats or clean coal. They tried to talk a little bit of that stuff this morning, but not, you know, because there is an element. Oh yeah, no, we need to talk a little bit about what we saw this morning. There was some talk of carbon secret capture and sequestration. Which, you know, pardon my non-scientific background, but just strikes me as a bunch of, what's the word I'm looking for here, Nick?
Hooey?
Yeah, hooey. Bunk. Bunko. Hokum. Ain't gonna happen realistically on this planet, in this world. Yeah, any of those things. But there was an attempt to... I gotta tell you, the fact of the matter is, There are a lot of attempts to make things green here.
Absolutely, yeah.
Things that you wouldn't otherwise expect to be green. We saw a celebrity this morning.
We did.
We were within 25 feet or so of a real live, genuine, honest to goodness political celebrity.
Sure enough.
And what's the name of that organization? If you can find that bag, reach back there for a second. Find it. I want to make sure I do this justice. Yeah, there they are. America's Ethanol Partners Growth Energy had a press conference today featuring none other than former General Wesley Clark. And they were putting on a press conference to announce that Wesley Clark was going to be their point man, announced as Growth Energy co-chairman. And I don't know how much that job pays, but they were at the Good Jobs Green Jobs conference here, and they are saying that ethanol will create thousands upon thousands of green-collar jobs. Nick, did that ring true with you?
You know, I'm still sorting out my feelings on that one, Bob. I don't know.
Yeah, it's bothersome. It's very much... I didn't stand up. I didn't stand up and be a pain in the butt, Bob. I was tempted. But they got up, and this was the interesting part. They said that they had been challenging Big Food to stop lying about ethanol. And by that, you know, is this, I guess, lying about ethanol, would that be pointing out the fact that a lot of people have taken to planting, that the price of corn's been driven up, the people are planting corn instead of, oh, I don't know. Let's see, in Mexico they tilled under some hundreds of years old agave fields that were used for tequila production. That'd break poor Bartok's heart. But yeah, that being, and then there was something about, let's see if I can find the statistic here, how they have reduced water, water waste, or water usage, and increased the yield of the corn in question. And you know how I feel about number two field grade Roundup Ready corn. You know, the stuff that you can boil for 8 days running and still break a tooth on.
Right.
And oh wow, Ferg's in the room.
Ferg
is in the house.
I'm gonna have to jump in the chat room now.
Hey Ferg.
Ferg dog. I called him that earlier. He didn't seem to like it.
Well, you know, he'll get over it. Hey, the answer's to Ferg. Hey, Ferg. Yes. No, I'm just saying hi, son. Just saying hi. But what? No. Number two field grade corn is this genetically modified stuff, and it's made not to be corn. It's made to be a resource. It's where high fructose corn syrup comes from. It's where you know, a lot of America's health problems come from. And if that's what they're using, then we're going to have a hard time saying that it's green. And I'll defer to somebody else. With John Fox, you're listening. If you're making something out of something that's genetically modified in the first place, can that be green? I'm just asking. If you're making the, but, and there was talk about, you know, cellulose-based ethanol and things like that as being, you know, something down the road. Corn cob, I guess we don't do anything with the corn cobs right now, do we?
You think we would be contemplating that aspect, huh?
No, but apparently we don't. Corn cob-based ethanol is something they say is in the future. Cellulose-based ethanol is something that they say is in the future. One of the things that apparently they wanted was for the federal government to relax the standards for blending of ethanol into gasoline, saying that it yields gallon for gallon a 50% reduction in greenhouse gases. And, you know, like I said, there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of really great ideas going on here. I was not inclined to just bite on that. Made me a little bit leery. So that was our brush with greatness. Now something that was slightly more inspiring took place shortly thereafter. We also attended a press conference featuring AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, who was talking about the creation of a green jobs-based institute. Was that the gist of it, Nick?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure.
And it was going to be funded by the AFL-CIO. AFL-CIO. I just stepped on my own toe. It's a little hairy around here. To foster green practices among organized labor, and that's the kind of synergistic relationship that you've got to have if we are going to accomplish what it is that a lot of these folks are setting out to do. One of the things that one of the things that I would simply love to do is to take our cell phone device,
right,
and march my happy butt into the reception in there, but we don't have that going yet. Um, How? Well, no, we've got to get the cell phone going out of here and over to here. And the funny thing is we've got... Yeah, this part. I got this part. But it can't hear... can't hear me yet. And I find that odd. I'm going to try something here. I tell you what, give me a minute. We're going to do a little tech-alizing before we get some folks back here behind the microphone. Let's see. What do we want? What would be a good song for this point right now? Okay, this is getting to be a bit of a hassle. Okay, everything's working. All right, let's see. Oh, here we go.
You will linger.
There we go. Be right back.
Linger there for hours.
Question for the ages, what's going on with my rap pages? Rappers gonna be down, but listen, you got to feel it within your body and your spirit when you listen to the rhythm. Come on, it's the abstract, rulers on the beat, women all around the globe, the world, you gotta follow me. Changing history, categories, different people in the same territories. Hip-hop in the form of black IP, so watch
watch it be mindful of the speakers, please, cause they gon' rumble and shake the ground, break out those breaking sound, pleasant and baseball pounds, trees make the things profound. If you wanna do to help you out, make it cool around your friends without smoking out, play the song kinda loud, it can help you out, and you can work it out, and you can work it out, it's like that, and we got it like that,
like that.
You know we got it like that,
like that.
Yeah, we got it like that,
like that.
It's like that, like that. Yeah, we got it like that,
like that.
You know we got it like that,
like that.
Yeah, we got it like that,
like that.
It's like that,
cause I got it like that.
And I got it like that also. Got a style that's way out like Boston. You know I'm known to cook a nigga like Choco. Steady dropping rhymes like it's heavy cargo. Yup, really far though. From El Segundo to Toronto. I once hit a girl up in Chicago, but I never say no unless my name was Tonto. Yup, you know how the date rate go. Kobe, show the class.
Uptown, it's murder out in the street. Uptown, it's murder out in the street. That's where I found my magic wand. That's where you meet if you found me. Most every night. Since May, there's trouble. Most every night. Where once we danced our sweet routine, it makes wine and kerosene.
Temporary plan for the moment. I've got this crazy idea that I want to get this X-Lite phone cooking. So I'm going to stop the stream. Okay, I'm going to stop the stream for just a minute. We will revert to White Rose music. Okay, hold on a minute. Question from the boy. Yeah, Ferg. I'm going to stop the stream for just a minute and then see if I can get the X-Lite cooking. And if we can do that, we'll, and that's the soft, never mind. That's the technology we use. At any rate, get that going and, then I will, also, and then I'll, get back to this. So stand by, please.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
The change? You are the change. And that's correct. And that's what I'm saying to the good folks here, but whether you're environmentalists, entrepreneurs, labor union people, whatever, that we have to be the force that makes the difference. And the difference is that for the last 30 years, we've not been able to get inside, you know, even in the Clinton administration. We got, you know, some token things thrown at us, but the real change now is that the White House door is open. I think the congressional door is open as well, and they're saying, okay, come make us do something. And so it's incumbent on us to be the difference.
It's reminiscent, isn't it, Jim, of the that old line from FDR, where he said, "I like what you're doing. I want to do what you're doing. Now make me do it."
Precisely.
Do we have a chance through movements like this to?
This is the only chance we have, is through movements. That's how progressives make any difference in America, is when we organize at the grassroots level and bring our country power into our countryside power. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm including, I don't mean just the rural areas.
I mean,
the cities as well, and come inside with our force. And that produces the change. Nobody inside, whether it's a president or a governor or a senator or whoever, can make the difference. It has to come from the outside, because the inside power, there are 13,000 corporate lobbyists in this city, in Washington, D.C.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah. And now they're not on our side.
No.
And we have a recalcitrant, knuckle-dragging bunch of Neanderthal Republicans who want to stand in the way. I'm not saying all of them, but I'm just saying leadership here in Washington, in the Congress, that just wants to say no. Well, that's not what America wants to hear. America voted for change, and they mean it even bolder, I think, than Obama thinks they do. America wants real change, and that is only going to come by these kind of coalitions of workers with environmentalists, and I'd say also with farmers. I was just out in Iowa with a group called the American Corn Growers Association, and they are totally on to this environmental program, not just about ethanol and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. but wind energy, solar energy, all of that. They see the future, and they want to be a part of this change, and that's the only thing that makes the change, is when people want to make it themselves.
Well, let me ask you about a specific topic, because just to put a little prologue on everything.
Sure.
I have followed your career for quite some time, read your books.
You're the one.
Yeah, I am.
I wondered.
I've got two.
Okay.
Also ran your commentaries on our program, on our radio network.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you.
And you're a point of inspiration for the idea that there can be liberal talk radio.
Oh, yeah.
That there are people out there that want to have these conversations. That's why we talk with working folks every day.
Exactly.
and have extended long-form conversations. With that in mind, the whole operation was formed as a partnership between environmental activists and labor activists in West Virginia.
Right.
And I wanted to take a moment, first of all, to thank you for speaking out so broadly, so boldly, and so profoundly on the issue of mountain removal.
Oh. This is so atrocious. I just almost upchuck, you know,
yeah.
every time I think about it, about what's happening to these ancient mountains and these people, you know. It's just a crime. And I think the more people know it, they hear it from you, they go on the websites of the great mountain organizations, and they see what's actually happening. Because a lot of people can't believe it's actually happening. I've had people send me emails and said, well, I talked to somebody and they said, this isn't happening. They're not doing that. And I said, well, here's the website. You know, go look at it yourself, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. We're sponsored. The network is sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch, which
fabulous.
Is one of the grassroots
One of the great ones, yeah.
One of the questions that I've been asking while I've been here, as we look at this nexus between labor and environmental issues, is how do we get the green jobs into Appalachia? Because until we replace those jobs blowing up mountains with something viable,
totally.
How can we expect to green that area?
And of course, blowing out blowing up mountains means less jobs, even
yes.
in coal. But yes, absolutely. And this has to be a priority. And I'm pushing this, and I think this group has to go to Obama and to the Congress and say, this is not just about the cities. This is not just about cars. This is about the countryside of America, really the grassroots. The rural communities have a huge role to play all across the country, but certainly in Appalachia. I mean, we've talked, you know, in my state of Texas, the poorest area of our state is down in South Texas in what are called colonias, unincorporated areas that don't have water, they don't have sewer. And we've talked about this for generations, not just decades, you know, generations. And it's time to do something about it. And here's a chance, because whether it's wind energy, solar energy, the internet infrastructure of rural America,
right.
all of that has to be, everybody doesn't have to go to the city, you know. That's the change. We have to just admit that, you know, and make that a point of our policy.
Yeah, there's a place for everything. Let me make sure that you don't leave without one of these.
All right. That's Cold River Wind.
That's one of the
things. For any wind.
That's one of the biggest projects we've got going on right now, Jim. The Cold River Mountain sits in the heart of the Appalachian coal fields, and it is it is slated for destruction.
Yeah.
Frankly,
yeah,
it'll destroy the community. It'll destroy the region
yeah.
when it goes. But we have a viable plan put forward for a massive wind farm that
Thank
can
you.
Provide good jobs in perpetuity, 200,000 houses worth of electricity, as opposed to blowing up the mountain. Now the problem, and you know, I think you were the first person to coin the term Congress critter.
Yeah,
I got some Congress critters.
Yeah, you do.
and that's a question for populists and activists: is how do you get past the absolute blinding amounts of money that are involved in making because that's what we face in West Virginia, in our congressional delegation.
Yeah.
They get beaten over the head with, but we're bringing jobs.
Yeah, right. And now people, I think, more and more people are realizing they're not bringing jobs, and they're bringing low wage jobs, and in fact things like wind energy and other true grassroots economic development, not tinkle down economics, but percolate up economics,
right.
Is our future. And so we just have to keep pushing. We have to keep pushing with our ideas and our ideals. Mm-hmm. And we also have to push some reforms. Number of states now are doing public financing of their elections. Maine, mm-hmm. North Carolina, and some of their elections.
We're trying to move it in West Virginia.
Arizona,
as well.
Other. Mm-hmm. This is a huge change. In Maine now, they have 83% of their Senate and 84% of their House elected without ever taking a dime in corporate money, because public financing is available. That alternative is available to them.
And
Republicans do it as well as Democrats. Greens do it.
And it makes a larger general population of brains you can have
Exactly.
Okay, one last thing before you go, because I know you're a little pressed for time, and I really appreciate you taking time.
Oh, it's a joy.
Here.
Thank you.
Now I'm from West Virginia, but I was born and raised in Alabama. I'm a
Southerner. That's all right.
Yeah, we'll get over it.
It's okay.
Yeah, you're
no.
a Texan. How do we take that next step to reclaim the South for liberal values, progressive ideas?
Incremental. We keep pushing those values: economic fairness, social justice, equal opportunity for all people. You know, the populist movement in the 1800s came out of the South.
Yes, it did.
It came out of Texas. It moved up the Plain State. It moved into the upper Midwest. But it came out of the South. That's who people are. Our political spectrum is not right to left. It's top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know, that's where right to left is theory. It's ideology. Top to bottom is experience. That's what people are experiencing in Appalachia with mountaintop removal.
Exactly.
And a number of other issues. And so we have to recognize that people are not necessarily liberal or conservative. They want common sense, and they want the common good. And we've got to get back to that concept.
There's no such thing as conservative cornflakes or
liberal
beans
yeah,
and cornbread.
Right, yeah. And push that and put candidates up. In Texas now, we have 150 member House of Representatives, and we now have 76 Democrats and 76 Republicans, 74 Democrats. So we've been gaining even in that state. Dallas County, which has been a hotbed, that's where George Bush is moving back to, not right. to that little ranchette he had down there in Crawford.
Yeah,
he's not going
there.
He's going to Dallas. Yeah, right. So that county now has every county office holder from sheriff through all the county judges were all Republican until 2006 when they all became Democrats because we mounted a grassroots campaign. And that's what the Democratic Party or the Progressive Party, whatever it is called, has got to go to the people again. Get out of this notion that we can just raise money from corporations and kiss their butts and somehow or other compete. That's not a competition. We've got to compete on the basis of our ideas and our values and go to the people with those. And it's and even in Dallas County, that has shown that you can make it happen.
Well, and when that can happen there, it
yeah,
can happen
there.
Anyway.
You go.
Jim Hightower.
Thank you.
Thank you very
pleasure
much.
To be with
it's
you.
A pleasure to meet you, sir.
Keep kicking.
We're going to try.
All right.
You do the same. Progressive icon Jim Hightower dropping by the table. Kelly, you're wonderful. Through the efforts of Blue Green Alliance Communications Director Kelly Schwinghammer. Yeah. Let's get Bill over here and get some stuff cooking. We're going to talk next with West Virginia's Sierra Club Representative Bill Price. He will be here momentarily. To talk about a lot of this. All right, sidle on up to the microphone, Bill. Thanks for taking time to talk with us. You're the West Virginia coordinator for the Sierra Club.
Well, I actually work for the Environmental Justice Program in Central Appalachia. I'm based in Charleston, but I have states other than West Virginia also that we work with.
But Sierra Club and when did the idea of environmental justice sort of begin to get traction in Appalachia?
Oh, in Appalachia, probably in the late 1990s. In regards to this Sierra Club program, we started 6 years ago working out of my home with area groups like Cold River Mountain Watch, mm-hmm. OVAC, those. There's been people working on environmental justice for many years.
Right, on their own.
On their own, yeah.
First of all, I am really grateful to be here. As a function of the Sierra Club's sponsorship of the West Virginia delegation, and as a statement of general policy, what does the Sierra Club see for a future, a non-coal-based future in West Virginia?
Well, we think that that's going to be driven by the communities. What we want to see is everybody agrees that there's going to be a post-coal economy. Coal is going to go away. Whether or not it goes away in 5 years or 15 years is up for debate and many discussions, but everybody agrees that we're going to have to work to do something post-coal. That includes a jobs program that has good union-organized, sustainable jobs in areas of the state and in areas of Appalachia that traditionally, because they've been dependent mostly on the coal industry, have not been good economic areas. We think that what we need, first of all, is to have a series of visioning meetings, getting input from the communities that says this is what we want our community to look like once coal has gone away. We also think that the coal industry restricts economic development in those areas because mountaintop removal destroys resources. Nobody's going to put a plant where they can't drink the water, those types of things. So we think that we need an immediate cease of mountaintop removal and other irresponsible coal mining areas or coal mining methods before we can see true economic prosperity.
Bill, you just hit a really big one, and that is when you said nobody's going to come in and build a plant where they can't have a decent lifestyle for their workers and their workers' families. Is it as simple as what I've argued that you got to end the mountaintop removal before or the mount I've dropped the top. It's just mountain removal to me now, Bill. Is that the sine qua non? Is that nothing else can happen until we get that ended? Or is there any way to start building in this idea of green jobs and this nexus between labor and environmental practice?
Oh, I think there are things that we can do. I just think that when you start talking about economic development in the coal fields, I'll take, for instance, the Cove River Mountain Wind Project. You know, if they remove Cove River Mountain, if they totally blow it to bits, that takes away the potential of having the Cove River Mountain Wind Project. They can still mine the coal in traditional underground methods and still have the wind farm. But that's one example of a clear choice. Blow up the mountain, save the mountain, and have another economic opportunity. And we feel that, you know, we can save the mountain, still mine a certain amount of coal off of it through traditional underground methods, and have economic development. To do that, you wouldn't have to ban mountaintop removal, but in the long run, and in the midterm, mountaintop removal's got to end if we're going to have true economic prosperity, because it's not bringing the jobs to the areas that it's blowing up. And we've got to stop that. We can have these visioning meetings, we can talk about things like that, and we can have wind projects and solar projects and things like that. But we are, you know, in the midterm, we have got to stop mountaintop removal coal mining for there to be true sustainable economic development in Appalachia.
Now, politics. We have political problems in West Virginia, and political problems, generally speaking, in Appalachia, in terms of people who elected representatives who listen to everybody, well, not everybody, but they don't listen to affected community residents. They don't listen when we talk about what happens to the water up Prater Holler. They don't talk about they don't listen when we talk about the health problems, the poisons getting into streams. They listen to the coal industry. Is it merely a matter of we keep hammering at them even though they keep ignoring us, or do we start looking for people to replace them?
We start looking for people to replace them. But we need to do that in a way. I mean, political organizing is one aspect of the organizing, on-the-ground organizing, that is just beginning to get off the ground here in Appalachia. You know, there's a tradition in Appalachia that if you are elected to, for instance, a House of Representatives, let's just take a Nick Joe Rahal, you know, that Nick Joe feels like he can, you know, he's entitled to that seat for the rest of his life unless he decides he wants to run for something else.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, some of the voters in the southern part of West Virginia feel that same way. And there needs to be this change of attitude and a realization that if Nick Joe Rahal is not doing what we want him to do, continues to think the old way, then he needs to go. And we need to organize politically on the ground, get lots of people that will vote for an alternative, and go out and get those alternative people.
Now, let's talk just a minute specifically about Congressman Rahal, because you're well aware of what's going on, the mountain removal job that's going on up on Gauley Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Now that sits in the middle of an area. It's the part they're blowing up isn't protected yet, of course, but it sits in the middle of the new and Gauley River National Recreation Area. Something that I would think would be near and dear to the Sierra Club's heart. Because it's a sustainable means of enjoying profound natural wonder. Nick's on the horns of a dilemma here, isn't he? Because he was part and parcel of the creation of that park, if I understand correctly.
He was.
And yet he doesn't like to say boo when it comes to a mountaintop removal job. But aren't those two things finally in direct conflict, Bill?
Yeah. Nick Joe Rahal is going to have to make a decision.
He's got to choose.
He can choose the old way of doing things, you know, where he was, you know, bought and paid for by the coal industry and, you know, still continue to think that the coal industry is the greatest thing in West Virginia, or he can change and say, I will listen to the people, the common person, and realize that this isn't working. And so, and it's not sustainable to blow up Gali Mountain, and it's, you know, it's crazy. It's stupid. It's stupid to think that you can blow up a mountain that's next to the, you know, this world's oldest, second oldest river.
Right.
And say, that's okay.
Yeah.
And so Nicky Joe needs to realize that if he continues to decide the wrong way, then the people of West Virginia are going to get fed up, and they're going to go after him.
Does he have what we've been told is that he would like to see the federal government buy up all that land and include it in the Gali River National Recreation Area? Is there even a remote chance, in your opinion, of that happening?
I don't know. Maybe. I doubt seriously that that's going to happen, but it's certainly not going to happen if they blow it up.
Well, have you ever known of a land company selling the land for less than they can get for exploiting the coal in it?
Well, and that's a whole other issue with the absentee land ownership. So, I would imagine that the federal government is going to come in and buy up that land. They're going to have to use power that the federal government can use in order to say to the landowner, you're going to give us this land because it's for a higher and better use.
Almost an eminent domain kind of
situation?
That's
basically what it is, an eminent domain. Wouldn't it be great for the federal government to use the power of eminent domain for a good purpose rather than for a bad purpose?
And get it right for a change? Absolutely. Of course, you know, given the economic times that we're in right now, I look at that and I think, where's the money going to come from to do that?
Whether or not the federal government comes in and buys up the land or not, that's the issue is Gali Mountain needs to be protected.
Yes.
Yeah, Gali Mountain is pictured on the quarter of West Virginia. You know, we shouldn't be blowing up the mountain that's on the quarter. Otherwise, we're going to have to change the quarter.
Right, exactly. In fact, we were talking earlier today, and if you're driving across the New River Gorge Bridge and you look over at that view, you can see that you can tell just looking at it, especially with the leaves down and everything, that something funny is going on back there because mountains, they have an essence to them, and it's sort of barren and creepy looking back behind it. We came up with a novel new way of thinking about it. It's a scenic mountain Potemkin village. if you know what I'm talking about, because I've been up there, and back behind that immediate ridge that you can see from the bridge, back behind it, dead zone, moonscape. And the speed with which they can accomplish this stuff, because remember the Gali Mountain job, they started without a permit and did it anyway, because you know it's West Virginia and you know you got dynamite, got coal mine, and from November 2007 to November 2008, they completely moonscaped that entire area. I mean they can do this in a hurry.
Well, and there's two things that, first of all, the coal industry is having a hard time hiding this from the general public anymore for two reasons. Number one is the jobs and the scope of the jobs are getting so big that they can no longer keep it behind the ridges, behind that first line of ridges. The second reason that they're having a hard time hiding this is just the stubbornness of the residents and the strategic way that the residents go out all over the country and tell people in Boston and in New York City and here in Washington, D.C., what's going on. And there's nobody that I talk to or that after they've seen this up close and personal, after they've seen mountaintop removal up close and personal, that go, oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's a great, you know, that's okay. I mean, you hear just today in one of the workshops on that was here at the Blue-Green Alliance, you know, someone flashed a picture of mountaintop removal, and in the back of the room you could hear that. I can't believe that. You know, and then you talk to them about it, and they go, well, that's
got to be illegal.
That's got to be illegal. And it is illegal.
Well, it is, and if it was being done in Oregon, it wouldn't be being done.
Right.
If it was being done, if they were trying to do it in New York or Vermont, it wouldn't be being done. Mm-hmm. It's a function of that nexus between the bought-out political systems, a terrified populace, because, you know, I mean, look, here I sit. Dad was a miner. Granddad was a miner. All my uncles were miners. My great-grandfather and all my granduncles were miners. Coal creates that mindset where, you better go on into the mine, son. There ain't going to be no other jobs for you.
Yeah, but the concept of that is, you know, my father was a miner also.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the coal mining of your grandfather or my father.
No, it didn't. No.
This is not moving pillar with a pick and shovel. This is just total destruction of an ecosystem, and it's got to stop. And the coal industry, I think, is basically grasping at straws here. You know, they're trying to get the last lumps of coal from Appalachia before they're going away. And the decisions are being made at the national level that are creating a lot of frightening ideals coming from the coal industry. They see their industry on the way out, but they're trying to grasp to those final straws.
Well, once they've picked our bones clean, Bill, and they've gone their merry way, what happens when a dam bursts? What happens when Kingston, Tennessee happens in Boone County, West Virginia? Who's going to clean up that mess then?
Well, we've got to stop the Kingstons from happening. We've got to stop the mountains from being blown up. We've got to stop the industry from looking at other technologies like coal to liquid, which is just big.
Oh, we haven't even touched on that yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to talk about coal to liquid plants here in Mingo County that they're proposing, and they've got one over in Ohio that they're proposing. You know, this is the industry's way of saying, okay, well, we can see where we may have some issues now with electrical generation, so let's frame this as being a homeland security issue. And, you know, we all know we need to be less dependent upon foreign oil, and coal is the answer for that, which is, you know, which is basically bull. You know, coal to liquid doesn't work. It's extremely polluting. If the industry
doesn't it take more water in the end than the fuel it puts out?
It takes an extreme amount of water, and Naki will tell you more about that when he's got all the facts and figures. I will just say this. Coal to liquid is the coal industry's way of trying to survive, because they see the electric generation through conservation and through efficiency. They're not going to have that market anymore. There's going to be a tax on carbon that's going to come down. And they see a way of saying, this is a way we can open up a new market. The thing is, it's extremely polluting. Even if you were somehow able to capture the carbon and put it underground and keep the earth from burping it back up, then you would still have the tailpipe emissions coming from this stuff.
Sure.
This is not economically feasible. It's a stupid ideal. It's an ideal that the coal industry has come up with to try to save their butts. And, you know, I hope that people in Mingo County understand that this is a false promise, and that they need, for true economic development, they need to get together, support things like sustainable wind in their community, solar panels. You know, we can have true economic prosperity, but we've got to quit listening to the false promises of the coal industry to get that.
Well, Bill, I tell you what, you're doing a great job, and I thank you for taking time to come by and let us, you know, share a few ideas with us, because what we've done here with the Horn is to expand, you know, consciousness to a lot of those same people who initially said, what? No, that can't, and they've learned that it is. And hearing somebody who's on the ground out there working the issues is very, very important. One last question. How do you bring the next generation along? How can we get this concept of environmental justice into the schools, into public education somehow?
I think the next generation is going to bring us along. I think that's, I mean, I look at the young people that are here at this conference. I look at the young people that are getting involved in the mountaintop removal movement, getting involved in just this whole environmental justice movement. You know, they're the future, and they're going to bring us along. They're probably going to kick our butts, and that's fine with me. And, you know, they can.
Well, they can look back at folks like you and said, and, you know, they weren't sitting on their butts. Mm-hmm. They were trying.
I just want to say one thing about the Blue Green Alliance conference that we're sitting at, and I think it is a key element of the work for economic justice and for environmental justice in the Appalachian coalfields, for us to be able to talk to the labor movement.
Yes.
We're not going to agree on everything, but we're going to talk to them about what we can agree on, and together we can move forward, because, you know, they want some of the same things we want. They want a good paying job. We want good-paying jobs for our communities. They want union-organized jobs. We want union-organized jobs for our communities. We may disagree on how to get there, but the bottom line is that we agree on more than what we disagree on. And these kinds of conferences are an opportunity for us to get to know each other, get to talking to each other, see where we can support each other's
Have you seen
stuff.
That dialogue taking place these last couple of days?
I actually have. I mean, we had a rally up on the Hill yesterday in support of the Employee Free Choice Act. Sierra Club spoke at that. We had a lot of members up there for that. You know, there are things that we can work on together. We'll have to work out the things we don't quite agree on, but there are things we can work on together. And let me tell you, when the labor movement and the environmental movement join hands together and start walking down the halls of Congress together,
hallelujah,
Katie bar the door, that's going to put some fear of God in a lot of folk up on the Hill.
And it's fear they've earned.
Yes.
Is this sort of thing going to be a continuing effect? I mean, I guess last year this conference was in Pittsburgh. Is it going to be possible to build on, continue this coalition building then, between labor, between environmental, organizations? You know, you mentioned employee free choice. That's among the linchpins, I think, as far as real progress is concerned for working families in America, in the first year of, President Obama's administration. Is there a real presence out there in the environmental community pushing for that as well?
Yeah, I think the Sierra Club has formally endorsed the Employee Free Choice Act. We're pushing on that. I think other environmental groups are doing the same thing. I do think, and the Pittsburgh conference last year was the first one. This one here is the second one. And what I hear is that coming out of these conferences is the opportunity to go back to West Virginia, go back to Ohio, go back to Pennsylvania, and actually build on the relationships that are started here and start doing some grassroots level work with the steelworkers, with the laborers unions, and environmental groups in the community.
Yeah, because you talk about the things that we can agree on, that, you know, having the building trades out there, taking the lead on, for instance, green construction practices, on energy efficiency, and making that part of something that they advocate for in terms of the jobs that they seek. We can't do that for them. That's something that only labor can bring in on its own initiative. Do you sense that groundwork has been laid?
I think the groundwork has been laid. Yeah. I think that, you know, last year there was a lot, some suspicion between the two camps, and was like, okay, how are we going to, you know, we sort of, it's like a dance, you know, you kind of get to know each other. This year the relationships are a lot better. The conference is going very smooth, in my opinion. The workshops have been interesting. Yeah, there's been some issues, but, you know, there's always going to be issues.
Yeah, we had the little carbon sequestration.
Yeah, the little carbon sequestration thing. And then this afternoon there was a carbon sequestration thing the other way, you know.
Yeah, reality check.
One of my favorite quotes came out of the Pittsburgh conference. Actually, Carl Pope from the Sierra Club said, you know, if you're looking to build an alliance and you look around the room, and you are comfortable with everybody that's in the room, you don't have a big enough alliance.
Amen to that. Bill Price, thank you very much. And thanks for everything you've done to make all of this possible.
Thank you for being here and for spreading the word all over the country.
You know what? We'll go anywhere anybody will have us.
All right.
All right. Thanks, take care. Bill Price, Environmental Justice Coordinator at the Sierra Club. Come on around. Just don't let me trip you with my wires.
Hi.
Hi. Just kind of get up on the mic so we can hear you real good.
Sure.
If you don't mind, just give me a little lowdown, who, what, why, when, where.
Sure. My name is Nahi. I work for Sierra Club in Ohio.
Okay.
We work in Ohio to move Ohio beyond coal, basically. Ohio's been reliant on coal for a long time and still is. 90% of our electricity comes from coal.
Sure.
And, you know, West Virginia. You know this very well. One of our main priorities here and at the Blue Geared Alliance as well is to approach our politicians and say that we are failing our workforce, we are failing our workers and Ohioans in general if we continue to stick to ways of the past. The state of Ohio has this very unfortunate habit of being behind the curve on a lot of things. 100 years ago, we were behind the curve on pottery. We relied on the pottery industry to prop up a lot of our economic activity, especially in northern and eastern Ohio. And then the rest of the country moved on, and we were left with a lot of empty pottery factories. And then same thing happened with steel. And the same thing is happening with coal. The rest of the country is moving beyond it inexorably. We have politicians elected officials and leaders of all sorts who are saying we have to stick to this, and the fact is we have to move beyond it.
So you're working there in a state with a rather, shall we say, conservative tradition in especially southern Ohio, places like that.
Sure, it's a small C. I mean, the old habits die hard, and sometimes old habits are good.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes old habits
are
bad.
In other words, stodgy. but you know, this is the state of the Tafts and the Hardings and the Hoovers and. How are you moving into individual outreach to get people the message? Is this door knocking stuff? I mean, how do you put the light on for folks there? I mean, I live in West Virginia. I hear the explosions. It's easy for me.
Sure.
But somebody who's got a more attenuated relationship between the light switch and the explosions in Appalachia, how do you make it real for them?
Well, one of the really powerful things I've been witnessing recently is that people have this very deep ingrained sense now that something is very wrong. Something is very wrong and it's affecting everything. And because it's affecting everything, it must be systemic. And so a lot of our work is being done by the very grave problems that are facing us economically, socially, and environmentally. And people without even having an environmental background or having a previous experience with these issues are saying, wait, there is something weird going on with our environment. There's something weird going on with our climate. I feel wrong somehow, and they're reaching out to us. Sierra Club, in general, is, I think, one of Ohio's, our bigger organizations. We have a more powerful voice in the media, and we do get our message out in traditional ways, but more and more we're seeing that people are coming to us with concerns and people who never would have come to us before.
And when they do come to you, I mean, what do you tell them? What is the future you envision?
Specifically, the first thing we have to do to move beyond coal, and we do have to move beyond coal, is to get our efficiency in order, because we waste so much energy in Ohio, from the transmission lines that carry the electricity to the people at home who use inefficient appliances or who let it out through their windows or through their uninsulated homes. We have now a very strong energy efficiency bill in Ohio that mandates a 22% reduction in demand by 2025. But that's not enough. We need to do more. It's a very powerful bill. We're excited about it, but we need to go beyond that. And so we need to do a lot of work on efficiency, and that's also the fastest, cheapest, and cleanest way to clean up.
When you talk about the inefficiencies of the grid, Nahi, are we talking about a rebuilding of the grid or a re-examination of it? Or are we talking about less centralization? What in the best of all possible worlds, how would you re-envision power delivery in a state like Ohio?
That gets really controversial, and Sierra Club doesn't have a stated position on that, because we recognize that there are a lot of things involved. A total redoing of the grid involves some very tricky land issues, as I'm sure you're aware. We don't want to be advocating eminent domain, especially in communities that we're trying to protect from other sort of oppressive and high-handed actions.
Right.
There's that. On the other hand, there is a dreadful need for a reimagining of the way we distribute electricity, and so maybe one of those ways is decentralization. Moving toward more local generation will reduce line loss, and also, because local generation has to be cleaner, otherwise people will object, that will also lead to greater efficiency as well.
Okay. What about these alternative energy sources? A lot of talk here about wind, a lot of talk here about solar. Is that an idea? You know, Ohio has been absolutely bled out of jobs. Is the idea of solar and of wind and the industrial or employment opportunities that come with that, is that something that's getting more traction?
Well, people always tell me, you know, Ohio doesn't have any wind and solar. Germany is the world's leading country in solar power, and we have more solar than Germany does. Germany is a pretty pale state in comparison to most of the United States, and including Ohio. But the most job-intensive parts of renewable energies are in the manufacturing, and that's where Ohio has always shined. So in the 8,000 parts that make up a wind turbine, Ohio steelworkers should be playing a huge role in that, whether we put up the wind turbines in Ohio or not.
Right, in the construction phase.
And that's where, I mean, when you're talking about the job-intensive components of the new energy future, that's what we are looking at in Ohio.
Well, I'm looking at the headonradionetwork.com chat room right now, and I've got a reminder coming in from one of our chat room moderators who lives in central Ohio, who says, remember, the blackout of 2003 was caused by a grid failure in Ohio.
That's right.
So it's something that is very much a forefront issue for Ohio. I've got a question coming in from our chief engineer and webmaster, who's in Sydney, Australia. That's the beauty of this technology.
It's amazing.
We're real time with our chief engineer. He's been teching with me all evening here. Can't do that with a radio signal. He wants to know your thoughts. He's saying here, solar geothermal baseload. Now it's being done. Are you familiar with any of that technology?
That's right. Well, solar power in Wisconsin. Sorry, you said solar and geothermal.
Solar geothermal together. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the specifics of it. Solar, any kind of baseload technology. First of all, I should say that when I was talking about efficiency acts as baseload generation. It acts as if you are relieving any baseload strain that you're putting on your grid. Solar is being done. In Wisconsin, a utility is looking at solar because they know that they can't. This is viable. This is a viable way to meet their demand. Solar geothermal. I'm not entirely familiar with it. It's crossed my path a few times.
John describes it. It involves pressure storage to run at night, so that you've actually got a 24-hour energy cycle. He's talked
Makes
about
sense.
It a great deal on his program. It's being done in other parts of the world. Were you present for the afternoon plenary session with Debbie Stabenow, or early, well, mid morning, with Debbie Stabenow and Amy Klobuchar?
I was.
Did you hear Senator Klobuchar's story about the little phone company in northern Minnesota that was greening up its customers for nothing more than emergency backup for power loss?
Huh.
Fascinating story of a this is not one of the monster telecoms. It's just a local affair, but they were offering long-term financing for folks to have wind and solar that would provide emergency power backup for them in the event of rather frequent power losses. Is that something that Sierra is interested in terms of or where does the Sierra Club stand in terms of bringing federal leveraging into making these technologies available on a house by house or on a consumer basis? Whether it be a tax credit, a tax incentive, or something that will get people actually paying attention to where their electricity comes from and perhaps generating some of their own.
I think we would be very much in support. The federal government has such a huge role to play, and one of the points we're trying to make clear is that the federal government currently has this silver buckshot approach, right? No silver bullet, but the more bullets we can throw at the problem, the more likely one of them is going to hit, or more than one is going to hit. We would say, rather than these technologies we know are old and dirty and have stopped working, rather than subsidizing those, as we still do very much with oil and coal and other fossil fuels, let's throw all that money. There's only a limited pot. Let's throw all of that money towards solar and wind. Really use the silver buckshot toward the technologies we know are effective and will protect us.
Well, if you'd like to lean over here, this is what John Fox was talking about, and I knew this was the acronym for it. SHPEGS, Solar Heat Pump Electrical Generation System. So it's a symbiotic process whereby you use your solar and your wind and your geothermal in order to create a constant. Because that's always the knock, is that, well, you know, the sun doesn't shine at night and the wind doesn't always blow.
Very cool. Yeah, very, very much so. When someone says the word dispatchability to me, I always want to cringe because we're smart. We know how to diversify. We know how to make hybrid renewable sources. Right. So the sun doesn't always blow. But at night when the sun doesn't, the sun doesn't always shine, but at night when the sun doesn't shine, the wind is blowing the hardest. And when we have, natural gas for peaking capacity if we have to. And this is another example of a way we can combine, renewable technologies that by themselves may not be very dispatchable, but together provide 100% dispatchability, 100% reliability, and can provide baseload generation very, very capably.
Now, General Wesley Clark was here earlier today announcing they were announcing his co-chairmanship of this growth energy ethanol company. Where does Sierra stand on the ethanol issue? Because it's not clear cut, and I worry about whether it's green or greenwashed, frankly.
Right. Sierra Club is not really supporting corn-based ethanol. We don't feel it's energy positive. We don't feel this is an improvement over the energy process that it takes to process gasoline. We also don't want to see food being turned into a fuel product. We saw what happened to food prices several months ago. There was that huge spike and it caused a lot of hardship, not just in the U.S. but worldwide. We believe that the future of transportation really lies in the plug-in hybrid, but that's true only if we manage to move away from coal as a source of energy, as a source of electricity for the plug-in hybrid.
So then, as you do your work in Ohio, do you have active? I mean, for instance, in West Virginia, we talk about. The fact that there's no such thing as clean coal. We talk about all the harmful effects of mountaintop removal, all that sort of thing. And we constantly have thrown at us, the coal industry will spend boatloads of money to try to scream down whatever common sense we're putting out there.
Sure.
Do you face that kind of thing at your end of the spectrum? I mean, are there industries that are aligning against you to try to prevent this contemplation and movement toward a green energy tomorrow?
All the time. You know, we're fighting this liquid coal plant in Ohio.
Okay, we got to talk about that. Yeah. Where's this set to be built?
It's in Columbiana County. It's about, if you imagine Ohio as a clock, it's about 2:30.
Okay.
And right where Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia meet, right at the top of the Ohio River
as it comes into
Ohio. And the name of this plant is Ohio River Clean Fuels. This is the line they're going with. I think they genuinely consider themselves to be a green energy company, even though they're...
Oh, they got a lot of nerve.
Well, you know, they do. They actually are in position now to single-handedly increase Ohio's carbon emissions by 10%. That's the size of the plant they want to build. It'll burn 20,000 tons of coal every day.
Ouch.
And, yeah, 120 rail cars or so every day, and that's not acceptable. And Bill earlier mentioned the water issue, or you mentioned the water issue, actually. 23 million gallons a day out of the Ohio River and only 10 million back.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, this was permitted, by the way, by the Ohio EPA.
So where does the wastewater go?
Atmosphere.
So when the wastewater goes into the atmosphere, isn't it going as steam?
Mm-hmm.
And being as how it's going up as steam, isn't that warmer than the atmosphere it's going into?
That's true. There's
isn't this a warming issue? I mean,
there's
because it ain't carbon doesn't mean that it's not a warming issue.
That's true. As far as I'm aware, there's some scientific debate as to whether or not to classify water vapor itself as a greenhouse gas. If you do, it's more potent than carbon dioxide or even methane. The straight warming potential of water vapor, of H2O, is very, it traps a lot of heat. But some scientists say, well, no, water vapor, you know, it comes out of the atmosphere in 3 days, so it's not really a greenhouse gas. But either way, yes, it's warming the atmosphere.
Wait, stop. Sorry. It comes out of the atmosphere in 3 days in the form of rain?
Rain, yeah.
And this coal to liquids plant is going to make what guarantee that there aren't? Coal is filthy with mercury.
Yes.
Are they saying that none of that particulate matter is going to go up in? They're willing to guarantee that? I mean, this is astonishing. Wow.
The The particulate matter, we're very worried about the particulate matter because the plant is built on the border of Columbiana and Jefferson County. Jefferson County, home of Steubenville, home of traditionally really, really troubled air quality and environmental justice communities. So the Ohio EPA, in response to that claim, said, well, the plant is only bordering Jefferson County, so clearly none of the pollutants are actually going to go into Jefferson County. So that's not a worry for us. But, yeah, we are raising
logic
these issues.
Logic takes a beating sometimes.
We are raising these issues, and we're thankful, actually, that the investment community is looking at this largely with amusement. You know, a $6 billion plant with speculative technology in the middle of a credit crisis thankfully isn't going to go anywhere unless, and there's a big unless, the federal government decides this is a good idea and subsidizes it.
Now, I saw the other day that the United States Air Force had bailed out of a coal-to-liquids plant that was slated for Montana. But what was not clear to me in the course of reading that article was whether they bailed out because coal-to-liquids is a bad idea or because they bailed out because it presented security conflicts with their other bases out there. Is the federal government still... taunt me. Taunt me. Yeah, you see, they're taunting us to the good food out there. And the good beer.
The beer has a price.
Oh, well, it always does, even if they give it to you for free. But anyway, just to complete the thought, is the military on the verge of getting out of the coal to liquids advocacy business, or is this just a strategic choice in this Montana thing?
It's too soon to tell. There's no question I have that there are some people in the military who think this is a very good idea. In the specific case of the Maelstrom facility in Montana, their reasoning was a very site-specific concerns. Nothing about the real issue, the real world issues we're raising, like coal prices, carbon prices, environmental concerns. But they were saying something about there are rockets that keep at the base. They weren't sure about security and et cetera. However, they also said they will be releasing environmental and economic concerns later. And it's possible that they are waiting for guidance from higher above to say, we're not building coal to liquids.
Well, because two states in the union that have governors that have been more advocacy oriented in favor of coal to liquids are probably Montana's Brian Schweitzer and our own Joe Manchin.
You can add Steve Beshear.
Oh, really?
Yes, he told the Kentucky legislature several months ago he wants $50 billion in investment in coal to liquid.
There have been meetings out at, for instance, a resort in West Virginia where our congressional delegation had a whole bunch of Air Force officers out there and got them to adopt this idea of wanting to fly Air Force aircraft on liquid coal. I'd like very much to find out that the Air Force has wised up. Are these policies something that you can have some, instead of bottom-up, you can have some top-down guidance from something like a presidential administration on?
I think absolutely. President Obama, we would love to hear from him that this is a bad idea. We've heard that we need a price on carbon from him, which has been a very welcome signal and one of the things that will finally put the final nail in the coffin for liquid coal. But the Department of Energy at the federal level has an appropriation from Congress, as it does currently, for $8 billion to give to advanced coal projects as loan guarantees, it's going to spend that money. So the only way it wouldn't is with a presidential directive. So in a certain sense, we very much need one. Otherwise, that money will be spent.
You can't just leave corporate welfare money laying around now, can you?
No. I should mention also that in the Senate version of the stimulus, that amount has been raised to $50
billion.
In the Senate version.
And that's probably in there to sweeten it up for the right wing who doesn't want the stimulus in the first place. I mean, is that your understanding?
That's my understanding, and I think it's also partially because, unfortunately, there are still people who are thinking of advanced coal as a green energy source.
Well, I don't know how long it's been since you've been over in West Virginia, but we have these, and the minute I mention this, somebody will post it in the chat room and you can see it, these obnoxious billboards.
Yeah.
Coal, clean,
America's power,
carbon neutral.
Okay.
Carbon neutral. Carbon neutral coal. It boggles the mind. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to find out that the right wing is being appeased with some coal welfare. But you're doing magnificent work in Ohio there. How many people do you work with in this fight against, for instance, coal to liquids and this reinvigoration of our energy future?
We work with people at various levels, and one of the great things is because almost all of our activists are volunteers. There are very few people who are paid for this work. People engage to their own ability. So in terms of people who are spending like a part-time or full-time job equivalent on this, there are six or seven. In terms of people who are always willing to show up to a rally, take 2 or 3 hours out of their day, there are 20 or 25. When they're talking about people who are willing to sign a petition, there are hundreds, thousands, I would say.
How about working, doing advocacy work with the Ohio legislature?
I've gotten into a little bit of that. There was a bill, you'll love this one, in the lame duck session just last month in December, that would have stripped Ohio EPA of all oversight over mining permits and given it to Ohio DNR. So we were pretty heavily involved in lobbying the legislature to turn that down. They did. I mean, they passed the bill, but everything had been stripped out of it. It was a face-saving measure at the end by the coal industry to preserve, you know, some dignity. There you go. Wow. That's, clean carbon-neutral coal. Well, if I could, I would just quote my friend and a great activist, John Blair. You know, you may know John.
Yes.
You know, he always says, God invented carbon sequestration and called it coal.
Right. It's supposed to stay under there.
That's right.
Exactly.
The only clean coal is underground coal.
Well, Naki, and your last name again, please?
Canfer.
Canfer. Naki Canfer, I really appreciate you taking time to come by and chat with me. This has been a wonderful experience, and I think what I'm going to do now is I'm going to wrap it up and see if I can sneak off somewhere and at least see where the party was, because I've been out here talking during this whole thing. I wish you the absolute best in what you do. If you've ever got a message to get out, if you've ever got information that you want to get to a broad audience, some Ohioans, folks all across the country and all across the world, hang on to that. Call in anytime. You are a welcome voice on the Horn, because it's voices like yours that the Horn was designed to get out.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it so much.
It's a real pleasure.
Have
a good
night.
Care.
Hope you get some food.
All right, and be careful going home.
I will. Thanks.
All right, bye now. Naki Canfer from the Sierra Club, working in Ohio. Great conversation. Do you get a sense based on Matt? Look at you sitting over there. Come here. Get over here. Get over here. We're going to make Matt get behind the microphone. Rory's been behind the microphone. Eric's been behind the microphone. It's this or ride a goat, Matt. You choose. I mean,
yeah, where's the goat?
Matt Norpel from Coal River Mountain Watch, thanks for taking a minute. I promise we'll make this payment.
All right.
We haven't lost a guest yet. Tell us a little bit about what your work has been at Coal River.
I've been involved in a number of projects at Coal River. I'm sure you've talked a lot about the Coal River Wind Farm.
Sure.
Probably don't need to go into that. I've worked a bunch with coal slurry and coal slurry injections. I don't know.
Well, I was hoping that was mainly my reason in bringing you over here, because we've talked about liquid coal, we've talked mm-hmm. about wind, mm-hmm. We've talked about the overall devastation of mountaintop removal mining. And from time to time, the idea of slurry injection gets mentioned on the program. But, you know, it's an injection. You know, it's mm-hmm. like you go get a flu shot. You get right. a little bit in your skin, and then you're all better. This is not that.
No, it's quite a bit larger to the order of
billions of gallons. What are they injecting, and what are they injecting it into?
So after you mine the coal, you have to clean it to get the the rocks that are just in the coal and around the coal out, and also to bring it into compliance with the Clean Air Act to get some of the sulfur out. And so you clean it with this mixture of chemicals and organic chemicals and also mineral chemicals and a whole lot of water. And you're left with the processed coal, and then you're left with this kind of thick slurry. And there's two ways of dealing with it. You can either put it in a dam, which they do occasionally, or you can inject it underground. And when they inject it underground, they basically they find an old coal mine that's been mined out and that they're not working in anymore, hopefully. They're not working in anymore, and they just pump it right down in there.
So they just take a tanker truck full of this stuff and drop a hose down an old mine shaft?
A pipeline right from the prep plant to the
well, I know for a fact that you spend a bunch of time with DEP permits and things like that. This is legal. How?
It is. Yeah, good question. It's legal. And not only is it legal, but up until 1999, it wasn't legal or illegal. It just happened.
Nobody could imagine anybody would possibly want to do it.
Well, they knew about it. There was a study in 19. To all our knowledge of slurry injections comes from a study the federal EPA did between 1984 and 1986. Where they basically sent around questionnaires to all the coal companies and asked, are you injecting, what are you injecting, how much of it, and then that was it for 15 years until the underground injection control program got underway at the EPA, and they changed the rules up a little bit, they made rules, I should say, and they just went on with it.
So... Now, see, I'm trying to think like a cult, thug.
Right.
Okay. You get this letter in the 80s from the EPA saying, hey, are you injecting any coal slurry underground? And maybe it goes to a coal company that isn't, and they go, what? You can do that? Cool. It almost seems like that could contribute to a larger problem. So that's the only science that's been done on it, or even statistical work that's been done on it. But what are we finding out? What are we finding out empirically is happening as a result of that? But first, where have they done it? How much have they done it? And what is the upshot from it?
They've done it. It's actually interesting. It's a lot. It's clustered in the southern part of the state, obviously, where the most coal is mined, in the Mingo, Logan, Boone, Raleigh area, and also way up north in up around Morgantown and in that area. I believe there's actually an injection underneath one of the wind farms.
Tucker
Storm.
County?
Yeah. It's an injection under there. So that's where it's happening. They have a big problem up in the northern part of the state with it.
When you say a big problem, is it coming out?
Right, yeah. The Pittsburgh mine pool is up there, which is basically this over a trillion gallons of toxic water in underground mines, mine shafts up there, abandoned underground mine shafts. And it threatens to come out, so they're constantly treating it and...
Putting it back,
pretty much, yeah. Treat it, take out the clean water, use it to process coal, and then...
You're an environmental engineer.
Yes.
Is this scientifically viable?
No, it's actually not. It's pretty ridiculous.
Not even a little bit?
No, not quite. There's a major lawsuit in Mingo County in the Rawl area because their water was contaminated with slurry injections.
I wanted to bring you around to the Printer Water Project and things like that.
Right.
How long does it take, or is there any way of benchmark knowledge? How long does it take for injected slurry to find its way into your world?
It's really dependent on the site. It's dependent on what seam of coal the slurry is injected into, what strata the people take their, where the wells are at, how deep the wells are, what the hydraulic conductivity is in the seam it was injected into. There's a lot of variables that it can take up, a year to 10 years.
The chemical content. So, in other words, you might not find out until your baby is a 10-year-old, or you
right.
might, or you might not find out until your 10-year-old's a 20-year-old.
Right.
That's kind. Isn't that sort of like having a poison hammer hanging over your head?
Yeah, and sometimes, like, so, a lot of the wells, they'll look really bad, and you'll turn on the water, and it'll run red, or it'll run black, or it'll smell so intensely rotten eggs like you've never smelled it before. But sometimes it just looks clear and like normal water, but that doesn't mean it is clear and it is clean water. And that's
well, what are some of the poisons that are in this?
There's all kinds. There's arsenic. There's
Oh,
yeah, good for you. Lead. Whatever's in coal, which is a lot of heavy metals, is going to be in coal slurry. Plus, they add a lot of organic chemicals like acrylamides, which is a pretty strong carcinogen. So you're stuck with, you know, barium, beryllium, are two things that show up a lot. There's a lot of
and
sodium.
These things rot your innards, right?
They're not good for you.
I mean, we're talking about hair falling out.
Right. Teeth falling out.
Teeth dissolving.
So up in Prenter, which is a community in Boone County we've been working in,
mm-hmm.
almost nobody has a gallbladder left. Like, it's 98% of the people in the holler have had their gallbladder removed, which is statistically incredible. Like,
what about the brain? And I know you're an engineer and not a doctor.
Right.
Yeah. Damn it, Jim. But what about you know, mental faculties, neuro functions? I mean, where I live, for instance,
mm-hmm.
up on top of the mountain where I live, there is an abnormally large class of autistic mm-hmm. students in a kindergarten class, and they've got another one of those on the downside of the mountain. And the thing is, in the middle of that is a mountaintop removal job. Can one scientifically say and retain some level of credibility that it is at least worth looking for a causal connection between those two things?
I mean, absolutely. There's a study done by Dr. Hendricks at WVU, released earlier this year, or last about a year ago, where he basically took existing data from hospitals and found that the health in areas that produced more coal was worse. So, like, the more coal that a community was producing in a community, the worse the public health
and the
was.
Closer to the mine you get, the sicker you get.
Yeah.
So, when you find these horrors and you work on these projects, mm-hmm. Matt, one, it's got to make you just, you know, kick furniture.
Mm-hmm.
But two, what do you do about it? I mean, everybody, you know, Judy Bonds, Patty Seebach, Nanette Nelson, a whole community down there has been involved. Lorella Scarbrough, Bo Webb, these people have been intensely involved in fighting this fight. How do we take it forward? I mean, how do you sit to, do you see what this does to me?
Yeah.
Nothing makes me speechless. How do you sit there and look at something that's actually actively poisoning a community
right.
and maintain any civility?
Right.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is there was a little civil disobedience this past couple of days, right?
I heard about that, yeah.
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 Go ahead.
Early in the morning on Coal River Mountain, where they started prepping the site for strip mining, which is, and there again, there's another slurry pond that's the largest dam in the hemisphere. It's over 900 feet tall. The Brushy
that's
Fork.
Brushy Fork is the largest sludge dam in the hemisphere?
It's the largest dam of any kind. Bigger than Hoover Dam, bigger than Glen Canyon Dam. It's the largest dam.
No kid.
In the Western
hemisphere. And it's made out of dirt.
It's made out of dirt, yes. Of course, refuse. It's permanent to hold back 9 billion gallons of this toxic slurry, and they're planning on blasting on one of the containing ridges of that.
Stop it!
Yeah, no. And also, not only are they planning on blasting right on a ridge that's containing all the slurry, but that ridge has been mined out on several seams. And they're like,
and I mean, they've announced this, and you've sort of verified the geology of this stuff. I mean,
Or they just admit it?
It's in the permits. I went back and looked through all the old deep mine permits they have it in, and they're right up to the legal limit. They're like at the line where they're going. So
what? I mean, when you say they're going to start blasting,
right?
What does that mean?
It means they're going to drill big holes and pack them full of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, and set it off.
Put a little electric to it, or I mean,
give it a little juice, and it'll blow up the ridge.
But I mean, they're not going to do that once.
They'll do it multiple times. They'll do it a bunch of times.
And so, what kind of internal mechanisms do they have to make sure that they're not weakening that dam made out of dirt that's bigger than any dam on in the Western Hemisphere?
I sure wish I could tell you that.
Oh, so the answer is they don't.
Pretty much.
Dirt leak? Dirt dam leaking yet, Bill? Not that I can see. Yeah, set off another one. I mean, that's
how it's going to go.
That's
yeah,
the reality.
Pretty much,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So there was civil disobedience there.
We went up and basically chained ourselves to an excavator up there and kept them from working for at least a little while.
So what, the cops have to come and bring bolt cutters? Or?
Cops have to come. They interestingly did not bring bolt cutters the first time they came up. I don't know what they were thinking when they were told there's protesters chained to bulldozers if they...
Oh, they thought they were going to use their handcuff
keys?
Yeah,
I don't know what they were thinking. Yeah, but they had to definitely left us sitting up there in the snow for a while. But then after that, after we got taken down, eight people tried to deliver... We had a rally at the gates of that coal company, and eight people tried to deliver a letter to the president. And they walked across the line, and they were also arrested. So in all, 14 people were taken in and cited for trespassing.
Well, good on you for the courage it takes to do something like that, Matt Norvell. Mighty proud to be associated with you, mighty proud to be associated with the organization, and grateful for your work and the work of everybody at Coal River Mountain Watch, because, I mean... I'm sitting, you know, I try to stay fairly up on this, and I'm learning new stuff sitting here right now. And that goes to show the validity and the necessity of what you're doing. Yeah. So thank you very kindly.
Thank you,
Bob. And you can sneak off and get an ice cold something or another now.
Appreciate that.
All right. Take care, Matt.
You too.
Thank you.
Yep.
So this evening I think you've gotten a pretty good face-to-face look at what mountain removal means. And what coal means in terms of putting the kibosh on any hope that we might have for a greened economy, a greened workforce, a greened future. It's pretty... The lines are drawn pretty clearly, aren't they? I've got to say that they are. How are you going to green? How are you going to make? I mean, is this okay? Nick, mic's still open.
Right.
Philosophical question.
Lay it on me.
Prosperity comes to America. Prosperity never comes to the hills. Prosperity never comes to the Appalachians. Hard times come. Well, we live with hard times in the first place anyway. So, yeah, there you go.
All we have is our misery, Bob.
Yeah, Joe Keenihan used to say to me, the least we can do is share it. But with that being the reality, Nick, the one thing that scares me is this possibility that I have sensed that the green future and the green economy can pass by Appalachia like everything else in America has.
Seriously, you know... When the wind project first started, I wrote a letter saying, why isn't Governor Manchin jumping behind the Coal River Wind Project, you know? And one of the things is, of course, you know, if we don't get our foot in the door, you know, because, you know, coal's having a real hard time right now, man, and that's been the lifeblood of, you know, everything throughout the region for a very long time. And, you know, like you said earlier, you know, if we can green Appalachia, we can green, you know, America. You know, if it don't happen there, man, we're still going to have this big.
Yeah, because it can't work in the opposite direction. We can't green America and think, well, you know, we'll green Appalachia later.
Yeah, no way, no way.
You got to.
It's always going to
start
be there.
Here.
Yeah, it's always going to be there. It's like the red-headed stepchild in terms of, you know, if we don't pay attention to it right
that
now.
That would be us.
It's kind of vital. I mean, when you really start looking at it and researching it a little bit and finding out, like, what the true situation and the true nature of, you know, the clean energy effort and what it's going to end up facing. I mean, you come to Appalachia and start taking a look, and you realize what's happening, and you realize how big that fight is and how very important it is for us to get renewable energies and clean energies into the Appalachian region throughout.
Welcome to reality, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you, have you had fun this week?
I've had a blast. I've had a blast so far. You know, I'm looking forward to having some more. How about you? Have you had a good time?
I have had a very good time. A little wore out.
Yeah.
But not from the events themselves. No, just from that Herculean trek we have to take from the front of the hotel to get back to our room in sub-basement 2NB.
Back to the cave, trolls.
Yeah, back under the... Well, no, there's a beautiful bridge that crosses over Rock Creek, and it's Calvert Street, and it's like we're under the bridge.
We
really are. You can see under the bridge from our window.
Yeah, we're not being completely full-scale cynical.
No,
there's really a bridge.
There's really a bridge, and we're almost under it, and, you know, if somebody will bring me a bottle of screw-top wine, we'll have it done.
Oh.
Yeah, if the boys under the bridge can't get the top off of it, I don't want to drink it. But we are. It's Bob and Nick, the boys under the bridge. I mean, it's so far in a hole that they can't get wireless internet in there. The only thing you have is hardwired internet that costs $9.95 a day per computer. Learn that one the hard way.
I feel violated.
Every day. Yeah, and no kiss.
Soon as I wake up.
But we've been good and old fashioned wore out by the end of the day. So what we're gonna do now, it's 18 minutes past the hour. I'm proud of what we've managed to accomplish for the last 2 hours and 18 minutes. I apologize for the occasional breaches in programming. But we're getting better at this.
Yeah.
You know, this wouldn't happen if we had, you know, multi-million-dollar. But it takes $20,000 a day to do NPRs, all things considered, just those 2 hours of radio.
That, wow, man. You know, I would have never thought that. That seems a little ridiculous.
But we just did what we've done here on literally pennies.
Knowing what the horn does compared to that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I gotta tell you, contributions are down for the beginning of February. They were down in January. They're down in December. Times are hard. People are having a hard time. But, you know, if folks can, it is more than appreciated and, frankly, more than necessary. Because while times are hard, our financial obligations have not changed.
No. Yeah. Well, you know, please give to the horn. I love it, you know. You love it.
Yeah.
Everybody loves it.
Coalfield King Snake, you. Man, if we don't get a logo designed for that, I don't know what's going to happen.
It needs one. Anybody out there listening, if you can design a great logo for the Coalfield King Snake, I would greatly appreciate it.
I bet you there are people who can. John may have to talk to his neighbor, or our buddy Ange is out there in Arkansas. And there's other folks that do design too. You know, we got a new horn logo. If you look at the website and if you look at the chat room, that new horn logo is further proof of the open source nature of the effort that we're making here. Is that just a cool logo or what?
You know what, man? When I saw that logo, I was just like, dang, that's badass. That logo, I'm sorry, Bob, that logo is badass.
Yes, it is. Listener designed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who hooked it up, man?
His name is Michael, and I will not give out last names. But he has kindly given that to us, and the just a genius piece of work.
Well, great job, Michael.
Our buddy Dave from Canada does graphic works and has shared some of it with us. It's so cool the way people share stuff that we can then turn around and use to get the message out. Our buddy Alan the Trucker designed a bumper sticker in black with white letters that just says, "Cole's too dirty to be my friend."
Oh, that's really simple and really good.
It's just an amazing coming together of intent and desire and activist urges and talent. And then just to talk about the work that's gone into the website that John Fox has put in, that Gene's put in, that Sue has put in, that Lottie's put in, that Ben Birch has put in. This is just a stunning piece of work. And so I want to thank everybody who has helped make all of this possible. I'm sorry if I've been a little bit of a stuttering, babbling idiot trying to get this going. But in my own defense, I got to tell you, I'm not getting a chance to do my usual 8 hours of show prep a day before these 3 hours take place. This one's got, how much time have you seen me sitting and surfing news stories, Nick Regalado?
Zero. Absolute zero.
I mean, I walked by a monitor today and kind of did a double take, you know, one of those, Obama's still president. Cool.
Yeah. You know, oh man. But you know, Bob, I mean, seriously, man, you got to give yourself a pat on the back because the Horns, I mean, they're really operating in whole new ways and just things, pulling off things they've never done before and making it all happen. So, I mean.
Oh, this is absolutely blowing my mind. You know, Parson Brown's there from Chicago. He says, Topless America, the Topless America Project fundraises with pickle jars on the streets of Chicago.
Excellent idea, my friend.
Yep. I got to find a way to Chicago. I'd love to go and hang out with Parson Brown and that bunch for a while.
I would too.
And that would give me the impetus I need to go and find apparently the world's most fabulous hot dog.
Really?
Yeah. We've got to have the obligatory food porn section. Saw Tony Bourdain featured on his show Monday night. Hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Yeah. They've got a foie gras hot dog. Now that will that'll piss a lot of people off, but I'm sorry, it's yummy. Hey, I want a corned beef sandwich at Manny's.
Yes. Yes. Bob, tell all your listeners out there, Bob turned me on to this great YouTube video about Manny's, and it's in Chicago, right?
Yeah. Chicago institution.
Didn't you say it was like it's Obama's favorite?
Yeah, I guess it's a place that Obama dug going to lunch.
Well, you know, they had what, five slicers going?
Yeah, five just whirring corned beef slicers going on automation, full tilt, and none of them ever, you know, had anything. It was all constantly consumed.
Was packed.
Yeah, five giant iron skillets of latkes frying at once. Okay, I'm doing it. Okay, that's enough. That's enough food porn.
Out of control.
I'm starving now.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
And I don't know if we've got enough time to get across the street and get ignored at the Thai joint again.
I don't have know if I have enough time to forget my Sprite like I did today.
Yeah, when the going gets weird, Nick, the weird turn pro. So thank you, everybody. And, hey, Ferg, welcome to the chat room. Glad you could be in there. I hope you enjoyed it tonight.
Ferg dog.
Yeah, Ferg dog. I won't call him that.
Yeah,
you can call him.
I'm just ribbing him.
And Margie and Doodle and Loney and Jasper and Agnes and Laura and Alex. You know, we'll be home soon. And I miss you guys so bad. It's like not being able to have a drink of water. That's how bad I miss you. So, thanks everybody. Thanks to John Fox, who is just, he's getting a raise. We're going to have to pay John Fox 10 times what we're paying him already. Maybe 100 times.
I'd like to say the live blogging, we've been working with it and stuff, man, but we've just drawn so much heat at this table that I've had to work the room.
You have not been able to sit down.
Hardly. Yeah.
Barely. I mean, you've been up doing the missionary work, man.
So, you know,
people come by and say, where's Coal River? That's all you got to have. You know, put the nickel in Nick and walk away. Yeah.
It's been a task.
It's been busy. So we're going to break down. We are going to go get a bite to dinner. Thanks, everybody. John Fox, Ben Birch, Sue, Gene, Susan, Texas Betsy, Lottie. Who am I forgetting? Come on. Peter Godbold, our IT professional. None of this happens without that entire team of people. And it never ceases to amaze me. It also doesn't happen without Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are fighting and standing upstream because they understand that we are all of us downstream and downwind and always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. are listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.